Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. Becky Eldridge is a spiritual director, retreat leader, and mother of three young children based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She's a former SDI New Contemplative and the author of a book called Busy Lives and Restless Souls. Becky and I had a conversation about everyday spirituality, weaving contemplative practice and spiritual companioning into the spaces between and within our work, our commutes, raising children, running errands, and perhaps even beginning to integrate all of it as spiritual practice. We talk about the Catholic mystic Saint Teresa of Avila, who wrote about the spiritual life in an incredible allegory called The Interior Castle. And this interior castle represents the path to divine union by working through several different rooms, which each represent a state of being as we journey closer and closer to the divine, however the divine lands with you. But this path delineates a journey, and we have to begin at our beginning. And so what Becky does is she gives us a recipe for cooking our spiritual gumbo, the ingredients that each of us needs to begin our own journey, and how a spiritual guide or companion can help us discern these ingredients. Becky also shares about what it was like to provide spiritual direction and companionship to people who had lived through Hurricane Katrina. She has a real compassionate and down-to-earth way of teaching spiritual life through the hectic everyday and through suffering and tragedy. So we recorded our conversation, as I do a lot of these, over web conferencing software, and this one does sound like we're both wearing Darth Vader masks and respirators, and I'm sorry. But it's what allows me to have the conversation in the first place, here in my office outside Seattle, with someone thousands of miles away in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and be able to record it, which is pretty miraculous if you think about it.
Can you tell me a little bit about you and your
role? Yes, of course.
I haven't met you before.
No, I'm relatively new, almost a year.
Okay.
At SDI. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I know you pretty well now, having read the book, and you know nothing about me, so.
I know, because yeah. I was looking at, I had printed off your, like, email, because I was jotting, just, like, what did he ask? But I was like, you're visual media and technology coordinator. Like, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, really it means that I do whatever I need to do. I am I'm an artist, a visual artist first. I do a lot of
your medium. Like, what do you do?
Drawing and painting. And I do a lot of work around walking and contemplative walking and presence in everyday life, ordinary, you know, the extraordinary and the ordinary, the transcendent and the imminent, kind of those sort of non-dual spaces. And so I do a lot of like map making, cartography work. So visual media and tech, I do all the like the digital publications, like Listen and Connections. I put those together.
Do you help with presence with Nick at all, with presence or not?
Very little. A lot of presence, yeah, work, you know, is Nick and Toby, and kind of happens outside of the office. So outside of just sort of cursory glances at things and kind of editing, I'm pretty hands-off with presence. I do video and photo work, so like at the conferences, I'm running around taking pictures. And then, you know, just kind of whatever needs doing. We're a small team, so.
That's really neat. And so then, I mean, to teach art and do art and then to come work for SDI, I mean, and you talked a little bit, you have your own contemplative walking. Are you, do you do spiritual direction too, or just kind of drawn to the contemplative way, so to speak, or what?
Yeah, the spiritual direction, spiritual companioning component is, I've been learning a lot more about it. Like, I am not a trained spiritual director. But I find myself in very deep conversations with a lot of people, learning to do the work of deep listening and helping people discern God in their life. And it's something that I've been personally hungry for several years. People like know a lot of, have a lot of knowledge about how God operates, but like, I don't have that felt presence or that, like, I don't feel like I know God, and I don't have a sense of how God knows me. And so that put me on this journey, where I've discovered, you know, mystics like St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross and Thomas Merton. Right, yeah.
I cannot read it. I'm literally reading everything of Teresa of Avila right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah, this, I don't know, you know, we could go that whole route, but she just fascinates me. She's fascinating. I mean, just, I had read her Interior Castle years and years and years ago, and then I just wanted to relearn. And so I'm reading everything. Like, I want to read everything that led up to Interior Castle. So right now, I've done her Way of Perfection. I'm reading her Book of Life. I'm almost done with it. I'm about to read her Spiritual Testimonies and Soliloquies and literally everything. I'm reading everything. She's amazing. So.
Yeah. Well, where do you, I mean, what is it about her that resonates with you, that makes you so hungry to gobble up all the things that she's written?
Yeah. Well, so one of it is, you know, my tradition is Roman Catholic, right? That's where I practice, like, that's my faith tradition. But there's four women that have been named doctors of the church. And so it's St. Teresa of Avila, Therese of Lisieux, Catherine of Siena, and Hildegard of Bingen. I never say her name right.
Bingen? I don't know either.
So I'm intrigued, you know, just by the fact that they're women, right? And I think being a lay woman and at the age that I am, God kind of calling me into this work of, in this ministry of direction and retreat work. I'm just fascinated by them. Right. And so that was kind of this goal I set out, is I want to read all these women doctors and what made my faith tradition, name them as a doctor of the church, which means that their influence was so big, you know, even from decades, you know, centuries ago, that they are still, you know, influencing the direction of faith today. And so I started with Therese of Lisieux, the little flower, but then we moved to Teresa of Avila. And what fascinates me about her is all she had was her experience of God.
Yeah.
Right? That was it. I mean, it was her own. I mean, she was not educated, you know, at the time during the Spanish Inquisition and all that. Even so much of her writing, I mean, I call it was like vaulted, you know, it got put away, like it was redacted and all this. And so all she had to guide her was what God was personally revealing to her. And when I think about my own life and, you know, just my relationship with God and this call, even to be a spiritual director, I mean, all I had to go on was what God was personally speaking to me. And that was it, you know, and through time, I mean, I did, you know, I was educated and got trained and that kind of thing. But, and then I think the heart of her mission is about helping people experience God and learn how to pray. And like you were saying earlier, learning to really know God and not just know about God.
Yeah.
What draws you to her? I mean, it sounds like you kind of were fascinated, and John of the Cross. I mean, those together, I mean, they're so connected together. So.
Yeah. They're like felt love for God, like that deep love, like the agape love, but also the eros love, almost like a romantic love. When both of them talk about mystical union, you know, it's like Song of Songs language. And I have never experienced that, but like reading their witness of God in that way just is, I don't know, like it's, I guess that maybe I'm sort of hungry for that too, for myself.
If they're reading their experiences, whether it's them or somebody else, I feel like it gives witness, or I don't know if validation is the right word, to our own experience of pride.
Yeah.
It's like reading, I mean, that's why I love the mystics. You know, I mean, I just keep going, oh yeah, okay, maybe I haven't experienced exactly like that. But for centuries and centuries, people have been writing about this experience of God. And even with like restlessness, like I think about St. Augustine's Confessions. Another one that I'm reading right now, this will be April's reading that I'm doing, is St. Bernard of Clairvaux. Like, I don't know if you've ever read him, but you know, he was, he writes all this about restlessness in his book, On Loving God. And I'm like, holy cow. You know, here St. Augustine said it, he was in like the 300s or so. You know, and then Bernard of Clairvaux was in the 9th century. I never do centuries right. And then even today, you know, and then St. Ignatius said it. And, you know, it's like when you look at this long history of, oh, we are restless as a people, and it's God that helps put us at rest. I mean, I don't know. There's something about that that's very comforting to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, in your practice, and it's something that you said in your book about how people come to you with this sort of desire, right? Like this hunger for, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Teresa, like mystical union, like that's like the last room, right? You have all these other rooms first. Like there's like, you gotta be in the first room where it's all dirty and there's the animals running around. You know, which is like her metaphor for, you know, thoughts and distractions. And how do you counsel people to begin on that journey into the interior? Like, let's just use the interior castle as the metaphor, right?
I keep this language is called like inner chapel, you know, but whatever it is, it's the interior life, right? Which doesn't matter. I mean, all faith traditions, so many faith traditions, I don't want to say all, but talk about, you know, this interior life, the contemplative path. And I mean, it's always interesting to see where people are, you know, where, when they come in, and I always think of it like the ocean. You know, I'm a mom, so I have kids, and I think about watching through the years, my kids develop their just physical skills of being able to go out in the ocean. And it's so similar to me about beginning a discipline or a journey of faith, one of the contemplative life. And at first, it's like they're just sitting on the sand and they're eating, right? Like they eat the sand, they're like, they can't. Sometimes when we first would go to the beach, they can't even go on their feet. They're just flopped there, you know, eating and looking around. And then, you know, they develop legs, and they develop, they have legs when they're born. But they develop being able to stand, and then they can go out and they put like their toes in the water, right? And then eventually they can go a little bit further out, a little bit further. And you know, now our oldest is almost 12, and I mean, he's way out in the deep, to the point that I'm wanting to call him back sometimes to the safety of shore. But I think of that analogy with our practice and discipline of prayer, you know, or meditation, whatever we're using, it begins just kind of like that little kid flopped on the shore. Like, you know, that we have this desire to begin, we have no idea what do we do with it, right? And then this journey of faith
we have different tools and prayer practices and disciplines to help us say yes to the ever drawing deeper to our interior life. So I think when people first come, you know, I'm always kind of curious, like, where are they? You know, are they toes in the water? are they further along? And then therefore, what are the kind of spiritual practices that support them to say yes to the ever draw deeper? You know, so at times, and this is where I really love Teresa of Avila's language about teaching people how to pray. And she talks about, I think often it begins with verbal prayer, right? Many of our faith traditions have these rote prayers that are communally prayed together, you know, maybe around liturgy or maybe for us to just, you know, it's like what our, maybe our parents, our grandparents, our family, friends have taught us. And that works for us for a really long time. Sometimes, right? And then like you and I were saying earlier, there came this point of maybe you were drawing and hungering for more. And so I think then it becomes, how do we help people move from just this kind of verbal, vocal prayer to entering, how do you come into the silence? How do you enter that inner space, that inner chapel? And that's when I think we offer people, I mean, it's like cooking a gumbo down here in Louisiana, right? We all need every gumbo. It doesn't matter what we're making with version of a gumbo. We all start with onion, celery, and bell pepper, right? It's the Cajun. Mm-hmm.
We call it paella, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But down here, I'm in South Florida. But it's no matter what. And I think about in terms of our prayer lives, you know, our spiritual practice, we need that same base, which I typically name as a time of prayer, a place of prayer, and a space of prayer. And so when we've gotten to that point where we're drawing, we're seeking, we're hungering for more than just maybe this vocal prayer is giving us, that's when I invite people to say, hey, maybe it's time to put a foundational prayer time in your life, right? Just like the foundation of a gumbo down here has these three key elements. And so it's looking at, when can your time of prayer be every day? Where can be your place of prayer? How do you make it a sacred space, you know, that helps foster silence, interior silence and exterior silence. And then, you know, if you put a bunch of Cajun cooks in a room and we said, how is the rest of the gumbo made? It would be 1,000 different things. Some would put sausage and duck, some would put, you know, seafood, some would put okra, some wouldn't. And I think then that is when we start the journey of discovering, how is God inviting us to draw near to God, right? What are the prayer methods? What are the spiritual disciplines? You know, is it picking up scripture? Is it contemplative meditation? Is it centering prayer? And that each... God gives each one of us this kind of uniqueness, this unique way of relating. But I think our foundation is the same, right? Of the Trinity of Cajun cooking, you know, the time.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, and then it's like the unique something extra is, you know, how is God in this moment of life inviting me ever deeper into the waters? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to maybe call this episode the Holy Trinity of Cajun cooking. That's so good.
So you were saying about the when you said the finding the extraordinary in the ordinary, and I think that's so where God has me too, right? Is the everyday things of life that teach us about the sacred, about, you know, so cooking is one of mine. I love to cook, so God teaches me a lot through cooking. So
a thought and a question. You know, people tell me, or if I sense for myself that there's a hunger for something else, you know, whether it's just noticing that I'm really busy and that life is, you know, has its stresses, and whether we feel harried or tired or whatever, just noticing that is a form of God communicating with us, I believe. I think that, you know, just that sense of discontent that, right, that like, I need something else. Something else is, there's something more. And I don't know how to name it. I don't know how to pursue it, you know, or if somebody is like, I haven't had time for, you know, for prayer or meditation. And I, you know, I really need to, like, that's encouraging that you're identifying that, like, that's actually something like deep within you, like trying to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're also a mom of three kids. Is that right?
Yes.
And are they young still? Are they young kids?
They are. Our oldest is about to be 12. And then we have a 9. She'd probably say she's 9 3/4.
Yeah, perfect.
Our youngest is almost 5. So they're in the throes of, you know, elementary school. They're in, this year they're in 6th grade, 4th grade, and 3rd grade. We're in the throes of raising children right now.
Yeah. Yes. And I know a lot of people in that space. And, you know, when I talk about these kinds of prayer practices, you know, I get a sort of, you know, a sympathetic, but also a suspicious, like, well, okay, like, that must be nice for you to have time to go sequester yourself, you know, but I have no space. I have no space for myself. Particularly mom, you know, the kids just are just like hanging off them every second. And so how do you encourage people to find that space? Or do you just have to fight for it and demand it? Or do you find ways to just sort of fit it into the space of breath? Or like, what does that look like?
Yes. Gosh. Yeah. What a loaded question, you know, but it's okay. A couple things. Number one, I think we make time for what matters. Moms especially, right? When and dads, I mean, I can talk to my husband too, both of us, like, we will move mountains to make space for what really matters. You know, so I think some of it is helping people understand what is the value of even coming to this, you know, to this being making room for this more contemplative prayer practice, you know, or prayer discipline, meditation of, because it's the source of everything for the rest of our life. It's what I've come to discover, right? Is making this time for daily prayer, this contemplative time to come to the inner chapel to grow my interior life, births so much joy, so much hope, so much peace in my life. So I can't even imagine not doing it now. I mean, I have to just say that, right? I can't even imagine trying to be a parent, or in marriage, or do my professional life without it. I mean, it's the source of strength for me. Mm-hmm. And I think knowing that, and when I, you know, and in my own life, and when that other people have helped me kind of work to name how to do it, and now working with other people, especially my peers, I think it's just being creative about how do you make time for what matters, right? Something that really, and most people, you know, really do, I mean, seek a relationship with God, I think, you know, or they're hungering for that more, and it's helping them name what it is, and then finding the time. And so, you know, like right now for me and my husband in our life, we just wake up a little bit earlier, right? That's how we get the quiet in, before the kids get up. They're, you know, they're in an age they can set their own alarms and get up. But I think for other people, it's helping them look at where are their pockets of time in their day, that could help begin nurturing a longer contemplative pause. And I could think of some crazy examples of, you know, people that have discovered, hey, well, I sit at my kid's baseball practice all the time in a bleacher, and I'm still, right? What am I doing other than like sitting there and I'm watching the field, I'm watching practice, and to help, you know, a father or a man or a mom too, right? I don't mean to stereotype that only men go to baseball practice, but that in that time, it can also be a moment of contemplative pause, right? To go to that interior space, that inner chapel, you know, or the carpool line. I mean, I can't tell you how many moms that I have talked with that it's like you sit there, right? You're literally stuck in a car waiting for the line to go, and how that can be almost like this, this just sacred, become the sacred space, you know? So I think it's helping people kind of find the natural pauses that are already in there that we so easily want to pick up our phone and fill with, you know, like the scrolling, the searching. We're on Facebook, we're on whatever social media we choose. And so helping people with intentionality, I call it looking for, it's intentional flexibility, right? Yeah. It's being intention. The intentionality is saying, I'm going to commit to showing up every day in prayer, right? Or every day I'm going to have this contemplative pause. And then I think we have to have this flexibility about, there are times that I can't do it at the exact same time every day. You know, maybe a kid gets sick, you know, and you can't get here. My husband and I were caregiving for my grandfather with brain cancer. And there were many days, life needed me to just be next to the hospital bed, you know, or we're waiting in the ER or whatever. But it was knowing that even though maybe I couldn't get there at 5:30 in the morning when I normally would pray, that I could still take a call and go to God at another time. So I think some of it is just giving people permission to say, yes, honor the intentionality that you want to put behind it, but with some flexibility around sometimes our busy lives throw off our plan.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can just imagine like sitting there in the car, you know, I feel there's like a space of 5 minutes whip out the phone, pull up social media, and you're just sort of mindlessly flicking through. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, man, I really wish I had more time for tending the interior life, you know? And it's like, well, there was 5 minutes right there that, you know, I made a choice, right? And you called it intentionality. It's like, yeah, what is my intention in that moment? Is it to distract myself or to, like, maybe I should do the opposite, right? There's always space. Just have to claim it for ourselves.
Well, and I think the other thing is helping people learn tools, right? So that when the gift of the space is before us, you know, be it in the car, be it, you know, even those that are not parents, that, I mean, you know, we commute to work typically somehow. Right. I mean, down here, we do not have a subway or anything like that. Right. We're all unfortunately in our cars, but whether we're commuting via a car or we're walking or biking or on a train or a subway, that there are these spaces, pauses. And I think sometimes we get overwhelmed because when it's presented to us, we don't know what to do. You know, so I think the other thing is when people are seeking, either beginning or, you know, just wanting to go deeper in their interior life, it's helping them learn tools, spiritual disciplines, you know, giving them something like, you know, I mean, I can think of my code from the Ignatian tradition of the prayer of consideration, right? Just pausing and considering what's before you, right? And turning your mind and heart to God. And kind of just asking, what is going on here that holds the potential for mystery? What's going on here that is teaching me something about God, the Creator? You know, so that could happen with pausing and looking at nature. It could be about considering the person before us. You know, just kind of pondering about the person that's before us. It could be about our work. I mean, it could be anything, right? So that's like one tool. I mean, I think again, I'm by training's from the Ignatian tradition, but I think of a prayer tool like the Examen, you know, which is just a very simple, you know, people I think sometimes worry, like, how do I pray? How do I talk to God? What do I bring to life, bring to this time? Well, the examine, we never run out of anything to pray. We're bringing our life before God. And it's just saying, okay, in the last 24 hours, what am I thankful for? Where have I felt consolation, an increase of faith, hope, and love? Where have I felt desolation, a decrease of faith, hope, and love? And then just simply looking the next 24 hours, right? So again, that's a tangible, I mean, I guess you can't really touch that prayer tool, but it's a more, it gives somebody something to say. Well, when there is a pause of 10 minutes, here is a practical tool that you can use to nurture your interior life. You know, or maybe if somebody's drawn to scripture or whatever the reading is, you know, the sacred reading in their tradition, do a practice like Lectio Divina, you know, of helping people learn how to slow down, right? And to savor the reading and let the reading read our hearts. So I think that that's all part of it, right? It's like you got the foundation of that time, space, and place, and then it's helping people understand in this moment, here is a tool that will help me nurture the interior life and the contemplative pause each day.
Yeah. The examine is a tool that you write about in your book. And it's one that I've used and a lot of friends use. It's one of the Ignatian practices, and I'll probably butcher this sort of fast definition, but it's basically just taking a little bit of time each day to look back over the previous day and discern where God was. And we are, we're an interfaith community. So, you know, however you name that, that deep mystery, right? That sense of presence. And, you know, I think it's easy for me to go an entire day, like, you know, not being mindful at all. But the examine practice sort of forces you to just like stop and be like, okay, now let me look back and see where was I not paying attention that maybe I can pay a little more attention and be like, oh yeah, actually in that moment, you know, there was something.
Yes.
So I want to use that as a segue into some of your work as a spiritual director, particularly when people were suffering. And so you're in Louisiana, you're in Baton Rouge, and you lived through Hurricane Katrina. And you were a spiritual director and counselor to a lot of people during that time. Can you share a little bit about that experience where you and others that you were companioning with were experiencing a lot of desolation? Share if you can a little bit about that, and also how maybe some of the Ignatian practices, whether it's the examine, were able to help you kind of look back and be like, there was presence here. There was something here. I was held. I was carried. I don't know.
Yeah. And Katrina, even though, you know, whoever's listening may not have lived through a Katrina, right? Hurricane Katrina per se. I think most of us at some point in life have had a moment of suffering, right, where we are pondering, going, what in the world is happening? There is so much sorrow. There is so much hurt and pain. Maybe even just looking at the world today, you know, when we look at some of the violence in schools and the violence that just happens in our world, right? That, you know, but when I think about Katrina for me personally, right, that it was a moment of, while we were in Baton Rouge and, you know, the bulk of the storm was in New Orleans, we just had very, very dear family members, including my brother and sister-in-law, that were in the storm. And, you know, so much of, I mean, it was just utter devastation. It was everywhere. I was working for the Diocese of Baton Rouge at the time. And even in the months, I mean, I'm thinking like 18 months after the storm, I mean, people kept, because the Catholic Charities was there too, right? So we would have, I mean, people were just coming down our hallway for over a year and a half afterwards, you know, showing up, looking for help, right? Looking for their loved ones who they still could not find. maybe, you know, people had lost everything. They had lost family members, friends, homes. They had lost their livelihoods. And at the same time, I was, you know, my brother and sister-in-law were very impacted by the storm. They had been, they're a doctor and a nurse and had lost, I mean, just the impact. It was very traumatic for them. And so the combination of all of that, plus just my own experience of it, right? Seeing the suffering, seeing the pain of others. I mean, I was in a real crisis of faith moment. And again, like whether people have lived through a hurricane or not, there's probably other moments in life where we kind of feel consumed by darkness or despair, desolation. And I went on a silent retreat, you know, a wise friend had invited me that I needed, maybe a silent retreat might be a good idea to kind of just do some deep tending to what I was feeling. And that is where I first learned this Ignatian practice of the examen. And whenever we learned it, it was a group of women on a silent retreat. We had all been involved in the storm. And I think the priest just sensed that we needed to process. And so he gave us this tool. Again, you know, it was like in that moment, we needed something in the silence to help us know how to sift through, you know? And so learning the examen that day, it was the first time when he guided us through it that I could actually name God in the storm. Like that I could go, you know, I could go, okay, God was present in comforting people through all those that were comforting others, right? Through the people that had gotten in their own boats to go rescue people and the people that had opened up their homes to come utter strangers to come live with them. You know, and the meals served and, you know, and all the different, you know, works of mercy that I witnessed. And I think I began to start even noticing how God was with me, right? But it was having this framework of something like the examen, like you said, to go, okay, well, what actually happened? And where did I name God in a presence? And then where was I and where am I still struggling? To name God's presence, you know? And so I think the examen, no matter whether we've lived through a hurricane or maybe it's forest fires or it's the death of a loved one or, you know, abuse, addiction. I mean, we could name and on, it's remembering that God is in it all, right? That God is both with us in our pain and our suffering. In the dark, what we might name as darkness, but then there's also this beautiful presence, you know, of light, of love, of hope. Later in my book, I talk about this image this wise woman once gave me about, she called it the two rails of life. And she said, you know, she was like, imagine a train tracks. And she said, you know, there's two rails that run parallel to each other. And she said, sometimes, like if we stand in the middle of a railroad track of life, all we see is one rail. And she said, you know, one rail that runs through our life is all the pain, the hurt, the suffering that we experience, the suffering of others in the world that we see. She said that there is another rail. You know, it's a rail of all the good, all of the places of hope and sources of life. She said, in a train track, she said, there's a crossbeam that connects the two. And I think our contemplative practices, our faith traditions, our beliefs in God, and however we name God, are what bring the two together. And so I think a prayer practice, a spiritual discipline, something, a prayer tool like the examen, I imagine it's like it helps us stand in that crossbeam of the two railroad tracks, right? Mm-hmm. And go, okay, I see you, rail one. Like here, like it's like turning and going, I see this one rail of where maybe I experienced desolation, but then it's also the invitation to turn and go, oh yeah, but oh, by the way, I also see the good. And you know, somehow God is in all of that, right? And I think from my experience as a spiritual director and in my own life is, there are moments that all we see is the rail of darkness, so to speak, or suffering or pain. But then I think there's other times that we're so wrapped up in the joy and the hope and the goodness, which is all good, right? But we can sometimes forget, we miss the suffering of others, right?
Yeah. And
I think a contemplative life in nurturing our interior lives, coming to our inner chapels, and using whatever faith traditions and practices help us do this, is we are invited to see it all, right? Mm-hmm. I think that is what God is inviting. I mean, that's what God does, is to see all of it. And I think that's what, and when I think of SDI and some of the conference themes and all of the past about compassion, for instance, I think that is what makes us have a compassionate heart like God, is to see both the pain and the suffering, but also the joy and the goodness and the hope and the way people comfort others and are present to others.
Hmm. You know? Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for that visual. The rails is really helpful. And I think it's something we all resonate with, no matter what our faith background or the language we use, that our shared contemplative practices build in us that sense of deep seeing, seeing both the beauty and the brokenness simultaneously, holding joy and holding sorrow, and being present to all of it. Yeah.
I don't know if it's Richard Rohr or somebody says, and it's like taking a long look at the real. I don't know if it's, I don't want to misquote him if it's not him, but I think
we'll just say you said it.
I don't know, but maybe, I don't know. Somewhere in my mind, and maybe it's a spiritual director in my own life that's walked with me, but I think it's like we have to take a long look at the real.
Mm.
But that is all of it, right? Not just one rail, right? But the long look at the real of good and the long look at the real of where there is sorrow. Because both make us more compassionate, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit about how you became involved. How did you find SDI, Spiritual Directors International? I understand you're a former New Contemplative. Maybe talk about, you know, how you found us, or the organization found you, and what that relationship has been like.
Yeah. So I learned about SDI when I was doing my training to become a spiritual director, you know, and they came through Atlanta, they being the conference. There was an SDI conference in Atlanta, and at the time we were living in Georgia. And so I think it was our second year of our training program. And we went, they let us go for free because we were students, you know, I think we worked a table or something. Like there was some like barter system. And so that's how I first connected. But I did my training program through Spring Hill College, and they suggested that we join SDI as a student. So I joined first as a student member, and then when I've completed my training, you know, continued and have been involved since. And then in 2013, this beautiful New Contemplative program came about. I think it had been about maybe the year before or so. Maybe we were the second cohort, but it was this amazing chance to connect with spiritual directors under 40. And it was such a gift, because one of the places that can pull me to desolation sometimes and doubt is how in the world am I called to this at the age I am, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I never set out like, when I grow up, I want to be a spiritual director. And so the fact that this journey had brought me to this place of, people kept showing up to want to talk about God and how do you grow further in a relationship with God. And I've done retreat work for 20 plus years at this moment. So I would give retreats and people would want to keep talking. And then, you know, these wise mentors of mine, priests, religious teachers, they kept sending people to me. And I'm like, what are y'all doing? Right. Well, I don't have the tools to do this. I have no idea what I'm doing to walk with people. And, So that's what led me to become a spiritual director. And so when I met this new contemplative group, it was so comforting. It was deeply comforting to me to go, I am not alone. Like, I'm not alone in being a younger person that has this call. You know, because I think in general, if you look at the demographics of those who are spiritual directors, they tend to be older than me, right? They're sometimes decades ahead of me. And it was just that community of finding people that go, okay, wait, you were, God called you too? Okay, maybe I'm not crazy, you know? So that was just this beautiful experience. And one of the women out of that group had become one of my dearest, closest best friends. She lives in Florida. I live in Louisiana. But just, we have continued to support each other in this journey in the practice of the spiritual direction. Even though our faith traditions are different. And so that has been a gift. And then I just think broader than that, I just so look forward to receiving presents. And, you know, I presented and got to attend the Santa Fe SDI in 2014. And my husband came with me because cuckoo that we were, we brought our 8-week-old, you know.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
We had our youngest. But I mean, I think this is the thing. It's like, again, like, if it matters, you make time, you make it happen, right? And so my dear husband, who is so supportive of all of this, you know, came with me, and we together made it where I could both, you know, tend to my baby and present, and it's just been a beautiful experience of being in this community of people that are nurturing the contemplative life in their own lives, but also journeying and accompanying others.
Yeah. So, Becky, the book is called Busy Lives and Restless Souls. I have it right here. It's a really lovely, practical book, and it's, you teach and offer very practical spirituality and accessible spirituality. You are that wise guru that you looked up to and thought, that is an unattainable role, but you make it accessible, you make it real, and I find that encouraging, and I think listeners will find that encouraging too. So I just want to thank you for that work. Thank you for writing the book. Thank you for doing your work as a spiritual companion to others. It warms my heart. It does. That sounds cheesy, but it gives me just encouragement, knowing that there are people like you out in the world doing this work. So,
and vice versa, Matt. Thank you for this whole just moment to be together. And I feel it. I can feel the strength of companionship just being in this space with you. So thank you.
Totally.
Becky Eldridge is the author of Busy Lives and Restless Souls, published by Loyola Press, and is available wherever you get your books. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others. Thank you.